The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Zen Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Blue Cliff Record, Case 91. One day, Yang Guan called to his attendant, "Bring me the rhinoceros fan." The attendant said, "It is broken." Yang Guan said, "If the fan is broken, bring back the rhinoceros." The attendant did not answer. Later, Daozi said, "I wouldn't mind bringing that rhinoceros, but probably its head and horns would not be complete." Shui Dao comments, "I want to see the incomplete head and horns." Shi Shuang said, "If I brought it back to you, nothing would remain for me." Shui Dao comments, "That rhinoceros still exists." Zifu drew a circle and wrote the ideograph ox in it. Shui Dao says, "Well done. Why didn't you bring it out sooner?" Bao Fu, on behalf of the attendant, said, "Master, you are too venerable. The task you set is too hard for me. Let someone else do that job for me." And Shui Dao says, "All efforts have proved fruitless." So following in the footsteps of Alan Sensei and Reverend Paul and Reverend Jenny to begin to look into this koan a bit more, I've been really impressed relying on the unfolding of this classical koan from the 12th century. These people who lived centuries before that, who were just like us, engaging in doing their best to understand this great matter. It's really important, as we've been saying, to know that these people are like us. Even though they lived a long time ago and spoke a different language, the human beingness of these people, their capacity to be present in their lives, whatever's happening. This is what we look back to see. We look back to be inspired. But what is the inspiration? What are they talking about? What is this rhinoceros fan? What is this rhinoceros? We've been talking too, especially in the Dharma dialogue, but really all through the Sesshin and many Doksans and many comments that all of us have been making about how there is such a thing as the jewel, we might call it, of our true nature. The wish-fulfilling gem, it's sometimes called. The heart of Buddha nature, the light, as Yunmen describes it, that's within all of us, that is all of us, not even within. When we recognize that there is something that is hidden from us, some treasure, we begin to make up all kinds of stories about it, because we are, human beings are, story-making animals. Some scientists, neurologists, psychologists have investigated this matter and know that human beings have an amazing capacity to put any two things together and construct a story about those two things. It's quite a talent. Often we do this while ignoring a lot of other data. But we are so convinced of the robustness of these stories, which we have been creating as ways to protect ourselves from a world full of suffering for our whole lives. And we keep doing the same things over and over and over again, constructing narratives about the self, about me, I, me, and mine. We divide the world between self and other. Other is perhaps loving or perhaps dangerous. But I, me, me, me. Once we get a chance to be present to our minds at an opportunity like this, a sesshin, where there's not that much other stuff going on to distract us from the me-making apparatus, we begin to see it. And sometimes, if we haven't been trained thoroughly, we believe in these self stories. We believe in these narratives also about Zen. We hear words like enlightenment, emptiness, satori, samadhi. We think we know what these things are, but how can we ever know what these things are just by thinking about them, reading about them, hearing about them? If I were to talk to you right now about what enlightenment is, it would be a real disservice to every single one of us, because it would either, my narrative of enlightenment would either match yours or be in harmony with yours or be in opposition to yours. Because, of course, you're all carrying around narratives too, based on really a very small amount of data points. Mostly what we've read, mostly what we've been told about Zen. To think we know anything is a real problem. Well, you know, when we know stuff, we know how to, most of us, I guess, know how to drive cars and maybe even fix toilets and change fuses. And we know how to add numbers, and we know how to read and write. We've learned all these things. As I said in the Dharma dialogue yesterday, we are good answerers. We are good fixers of problems. But when it comes to the Dharma, that capacity, which is so useful in the world, gets misused. If we think we know who we are and we think we know what Zen is, that thinking itself, the construction of these ideas, gets in the way of the perception of the very thing that we want, which is the awakened nature, right here, right now. During the sutra service, we read one of my favorite texts. It comes from Hakuin, a 17th century Japanese teacher in the Rinzai school, the Linji school. If we study this particular text, almost every teaching of Boundless Way is embedded in it. And I think that's partly because it's a text that has meant a lot to the founders of Boundless Way, to James Ford, to David Reinick, to me. And I want to read you just one line from it. I hope you heard it earlier, but maybe not, so I'm going to emphasize it a little bit. Hakuin says, "Those who hear this truth, even when once, and listen with a grateful heart, treasuring it, revering it, gain blessings without end." And then he says, "Much more, those who turn about and bear witness to self-nature that is no nature, go far beyond mere doctrine, that is mere received teachings." When we turn about and bear witness to the way our minds and hearts and bodies actually work, moment after moment, when we directly perceive these things, then all the self-narratives lose their robustness. They begin to fragment. They break apart. We don't break them. Our job is not to break the self-narrative, because if you think that's what you're supposed to do, there's a path that can lead to really a lot of distress. We need to maintain these selves in order to function in the consensual reality world, the world where we drive cars and fix toilets. But in the world of the Dharma, where everything is revealed to be something else other than what we thought it was. Those kinds of self stories, those narratives, block the true perception of this. And you all know this because, my goodness, I've had the privilege of meeting with all of you at least once this session. And so many of you are struggling with some idea of who you think you are or some idea of what you think Zen is. And I sit there and I listen, and then sometimes if it's really, really florid and overwhelming, I'll interrupt it. Because all those stories and thoughts and I'm like this and Zen is like that get in the way of what's happening right here. In this moment, being fully present to your own body, sitting here, being supported by cushions and benches and chairs, being supported by your own body. The light coming in the windows is not something you're making happen. But if you ignore it because you're favoring what's going on in your own mind, or maybe you're having opinions about it, or maybe you're making up poems about it or stories, oh, so beautiful. Oh, my goodness gracious. It gets missed. The light itself that meets our eyes has no descriptive words. We can only point to it. This morning, as I left the hermitage on my way over to the temple, I just live a 1 minute drive away in my little electric car. I drive up the hill and down the hill and down the street and down the driveway and come into the parking lot. It's a very sweet drive. My electric car notified me both yesterday and this morning, please note that it is extremely cold. Thank you very much. I felt that when I left the house. And the power has diminished in your vehicle. Which I also learned the hard way years ago when David and I were on a trip, our first trip, long trip in the electric car, and we didn't know about this. We didn't know that batteries die out in the cold. We didn't really think it through, and we ran out of battery on our way to a funeral. When we finally got there, that's a long story I'm not going to talk about. The guy who died apparently had said that he was going to be late for his own funeral, and his son said, "Welcome, welcome. You really are living my father's example." I thought that was sweet. But anyway, so this morning my car talked to me. And the air was frosty, of course. And I looked up at the sky, and there it was, the full moon. Today there is a full moon. It was hazy. And there's a beautiful line of poetry in our teachings, the hazy moon of enlightenment. And there it was, right there. Of course, it occurred to me, because I'm a human being too, and I tell self stories, and I block the world by my thinking, just like everybody else. I actually said, oh, out loud, there was nobody around, thank goodness, it's the hazy moon of enlightenment. The moon didn't seem to be offended by that. It just kept shining through the haze. And it lit my way over to the temple. The car started, even though the battery had died down a little bit. There was way more than enough charge to make a 1 minute drive. How amazing that the world continues to function without our interfering with it. And even more amazing, the process of awakening to our true nature, not who we think we are or all the self stories we've collected to make a narrative about ourselves, all those things are beside the point. Because the energy of awakening, the force of awakening, the force of the Dharma is running everything. We can't see it because we have so many ideas about the way it's supposed to be. Many of us compare ourselves to the stories, the ideas. And this is where this koan comes in as such a treat, because Yangwan called to his jisha, his attendant, "Bring me my rhinoceros fan. Yesterday I asked my jisha to bring me a snack." This is what we do with our jishas. We ask them for things. And sometimes they bring stuff, and sometimes they forget, and it doesn't matter. But this guy, whoever he was, he's not named, which I always find significant in koan stories, because he probably didn't go on to become a famous person. We would know his name if he had been, or a famous person in some kind of legend or another self-constructed story about somebody. He just says to his teacher, "It is broken." Let's just sit with that line for a moment. Bring me this thing. Do this thing. Play the bell. Play the gong. Play this. Set up the meal. Serve the food. It's broken. What a powerful thing to say. Very few people are courageous enough to say something like that. Whatever the rhinoceros fan is, and gosh, there's a lot of writings and commentaries on from all these different people commenting about this koan, because this koan also shows up again in another collection in the Book of Equanimity. It's a well-known koan. A lot of people for 1,000 years have studied this koan. What is the rhinoceros fan? And one teacher says, "Oh, the rhinoceros fan is made out of rhinoceros horn." And another one says, "The handle is made out of rhinoceros horn." And my favorite definite scholarly thing that somebody says is, "It's a fan with a rhinoceros painted on it, looking up at the full moon." I like that version of the rhinoceros fan. How beautiful. You can imagine, just like me, the rhinoceros of myself looking up at the full moon this morning. So it doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter. It's the object that is asked for. And the maybe this guy was saying, "Yeah, it's actually broken. I can't bring it to you because it's broken." But maybe he was saying something else. When we investigate this koan, this is what we look into. We have to become the jisha who cannot fulfill his responsibility to the teacher. And gosh, don't you all feel that way sometimes? Maybe you've made up some idea about how to please Alan and Paul and me. You plan Doksa and you think, "I'm going to come in with some really wonderful insight and they're going to smile at me and go, 'Oh my God, you are the one. Yep, I can't believe it. I bow down to you. You have so much insight.'" Or maybe you come in and you say you're planning to really show up as the broken one, the one who, "I don't know anything, I'm an idiot, right? Still more me stories. There comes a time when every Zen student's life when we have to just show up honestly as ourselves. All of us have survived to this moment because we have constructed a mask of the self. Some of us have done a really super job of this mask. Some of us have just slapped it on recently. But still, it's not what we as teachers perceive when we meet you. You can go on and on and on about insights and everything you understand, but there's no way to strategize showing up as yourself. It's when we get out of our own way. I've said this before, I love Alan Watts, his biography. He was a Zen dabbler. He didn't really practice Zen, but he wrote about it. He was just involved in the 1950s growth of Zen in the United Kingdom and in America, and wrote some very important books about Zen. Really wonderful writer. When he finally wrote his own autobiography, he called it In My Own Way. Oh, right? You know, it's a little bit Frank Sinatra, My Way, because he was apparently a real jerk. Very offensive to people, telling people what they should be doing, and horrible boundaries, and you know, with women and other people, and just all kinds of stuff. In my own way, ta-da. But he also recognized, and the book is lovely, he recognized how he kept searching for something and kept getting in his own way. And don't we all do that? We are addicted. Really, true addicts. If you've been addicted to substances or internet or whatever your life has brought you as some kind of obsession, you know what it's like to wake up and realize that the addiction has taken you over. We are all addicted to the self-narrative. It's functional. It's gotten us where we are, but it's useless. To truly see that moon, everything has to be gotten out of the way. And how do you do that? You don't get things out of the way, because then you're putting more stuff in the way. You just see. We just see. We notice. Look at this self pattern arising again. And so when this student says it is broken, what's he really talking about? What's broken? Because the narrative of the self breaks apart. It becomes less robust when we keep shining the light on it, when we keep looking at it, when we keep taking that backward step, when we turn about and see self-nature. It can't survive that look. The honest looking into, wow, all my life I've told myself this story. It hurts so much. And I'm not even going to say what your story is. We often have more than one. But they arise again and again and again. And hopefully at a sesshin, but certainly in the life of a Zen practitioner, we get tired of those stories. And you can tell it's a story if it's divisive in any way. If it makes something out of them and you, if it makes something reliable about how terrible things are or how wonderful things are, we preoccupy ourselves with these stories. It's amazing. We have really better things to do, but this is what we do. It's true, isn't it, that terrible things are happening in the world? But if we sit and think about all those terrible things, we miss the light coming in the window. We miss the moon. We miss the person who's right in front of us, the person right next to us in this zendo, breathing, being alive. We miss life. And then when we do find ourselves in situations where something is demanded of us, we haven't got much practice in showing up because we've been lost in our thinking and storytelling for so much of our life. So I'll say it again because I think it's really important. This is not something that we drop away, and it's not something we get rid of or let go of. It's something we face with all our heart, all our courage, all our courage. We face it. It's profoundly upsetting to do that. It really hurts to see through the delusion of the self. But on the other side of that hurt is something that I cannot describe to you. But many of you have felt it. A kind of freedom right in the middle of the distress, a kind of freedom right in the middle of the fear and the pain and the sadness. Right here is the only life there is. Everything else is a construction. We are in the construction business. It's time to find another job. Yang Yuan says to the attendant when he says it's broken, and these are words that we really want to hear. Well, if the fan is broken, going along with my interpretation here, which is not the only interpretation, by the way, don't take this as the answer to the koan, by the way, never do that. But this particular view, he says, if the fan is broken, if you have seen through the self, then bring back the rhinoceros. What is the rhinoceros? All the commentators ask that question, and I'm asking it right now of you. Mm. What is it? What is it? What is the thing that's hidden from you that you're creating all kinds of ideas about? There used to be a magazine in the 70s called What is Enlightenment? Wonderful magazine full of nonsense, really. But you know, all these ideas about samadhi and Kensho and all kinds of stuff. People snapped it up. People subscribed to it. I subscribed to it. I wanted to know the answer. What is it? But when those moments come, when the fabric of the self is thinned out enough so that the light of awakening actually shines through, there is no way to talk about it. That's not our job. Our job is to live into that and then learn for the rest of our lives. If this moment happened to you years ago, or if it hasn't happened yet, it doesn't matter. There is awakening and there is cultivation. And it doesn't matter what order that happens. Big awakening, little awakening, cultivation, 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 sitting, coming to sesshin, really making, as we talked about yesterday, really truly making an effort. It's not just sitting by the side of the road and waiting for it to come to us. We have to get on the road and walk it. We have to make this commitment. There are a lot of people in the world who don't do this, who even hear these teachings and say, well, if that's true, then I'll just sit here, whatever. I don't need to do anything. Everything will be fine. What's the next clickbait that I need to look into on the internet? And then hours later, we might come out of that and go, wait a minute, what was I thinking? I hope we have these moments too in our practice. Our minds are full of clickbait. Our minds are constantly throwing these old self-stories at us, so convincing, and we go and we go and we go and we get embroiled and tangled. And then often there's an interruption. This is one of the things we talk about, the four parts of breath practice, where we're with the breath. And then we're lost. We're off, you know, clicking on things and thinking about things and bemoaning our life. Or maybe we're also arrogant. I'm talking about people who feel bad about themselves. Maybe you think you're the best thing since sliced cheese. I don't know. I think it's bread, actually. But well, there you go. I'm a little hungry. It doesn't matter. High or low, good or bad, these are all things that get in our way. They're necessary for functioning, but they are not necessary for awakening. So get out of your own way. If the fan is broken, bring back the rhinoceros. The attendant didn't answer. And later on, he says, well, or Bao Fu says on his behalf, you're too venerable. The task you set is too hard for me. Let someone else do that job for me. What a funny thing to say. Can anybody do this job for you? No. We can't. Teachers can't. Your fellow practitioners can't. Your friends can't. Your lovers can't. Nobody. No one at all. And yet the whole world is offering itself to you moment after moment to help you with this endeavor of waking up to what's right here. And we miss it over and over and over again. There's a different translation of that line from Bao Fu, which I thought was very interesting. I didn't write it down, but to the best of my knowledge and memory, it says that Bao Fu said, Master, you're too old. You're too broken down. I don't even want to engage in this matter with you. That's an interesting twist on this whole thing. don't get caught in self-stories, don't get caught in other stories. Don't think you know any other person. You don't. We don't. Every human being is a great mystery. So start with yourself. Start with your own mystery. See through. See through all of it. Until the light penetrates you, until the moon shines down on you, until you know for yourself whether water is warm or cool. One day, Yang Yuan called to his attendant, "Bring me the rhinoceros fan." The attendant said, "It is broken." Yang Yuan said, "If the fan is broken, bring back the rhinoceros." The attendant did not answer. Thank you. So please make yourselves comfortable and make our semicircle. So Jenny, can you move a little closer to Matt?
Yep.
And then Ix and Aiden can move over. I'd love to be able to see people. Thanks. All right, well, Alan and Paul and I will do our best to have you come forward. If you are the attendant and you say nothing, that'll be interesting. But I think all of you have something to say, and we'd like to hear it. Yes, Steve.
Yes, thank you for that. John, I heard something from a monk in a monastery in Cambridge.
Can you speak up just a little bit more?
Yes, I heard something from a monk in a Christian monastery in Cambridge. And they live similarly. They have, like, you know, it seems like practice, the work and eating, and they do their devotions five times or whatever. And he said it's living without anesthesia. And I'm thinking this sesshin is a lot like living without anesthesia. Because we don't have things that, you know, there's a lot of things that I do when I'm not here that I don't do here.
Right.
And I think they numb me. It's the numbing kind of. And so I'm like, in this thing about not judging that, and that it's in recognizing the narrative, and so this practice of living without anesthesia is not easy, I think, and pretty interesting.
Mm. Wow, you said it, huh? Yeah. It's very inspiring, Steve. But not a choice we would make.
Hmm?
I mean, most people wouldn't make that choice.
I don't think so, yeah.
This is a kind of weird thing to do.
It's rigorous.
It's rigorous.
Yeah, it's why would we do this? And there's salvation in it for me.
It's salvific. Yeah, it really is. And you know, you pointed to this. I just want to underline it a little bit. When these things arise, to love them, right? All the ideas, all the delusions, they're not problematic unless we believe them and let them get in the way. Mm. They really have also been trying to save us and just not doing a very good job, right? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And all those forms we find so annoying just intensify that. We can't scratch our noses. We can't fidget. We can't eat whenever we can't keep snacking and snacking. We can't start eating as soon as we want to. And we can go on to, you know, all these, we sometimes call them ancient technologies, to make us just sit face to face with the stuff that we usually try so hard to push away. Not just through numbness, but through pointless activity. Yeah, how wonderful.
And it's powerful and It's like deep work.
As you're both speaking, I keep thinking of the line. I'm just going to not say it exactly. When I was a child, I spoke as a child, but now I'm grown and I put away childish things. I saw through a glass darkly, and now I see face to face. Right? That is from the New Testament, I'm pretty sure. And it's the seeing face to face. You know, I used to see through a glass darkly. Everything was hidden. And I put away the childish things, which helped me get here. Thank you, thank you, thank you. But don't need them anymore. So this is not particular to Zen. I think what you're talking about is particular to a mystic tradition, which Zen is part of. Yeah, and it happens, all the religions have these aspects. Because this is a human yearning for seeing face to face. Thank you. Yeah, Vix.
Thank you, Melissa. During your talk, you said something about, like how it can be uncomfortable to, like, look at the stories and like, see the stories as stories. And like, yeah, I feel like I've been experiencing that a lot, and it's like. And that's also a story, and it like feels like threatening, like, and like I can just like pop.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I didn't say it was uncomfortable. I think I said it hurts. Yeah. Right? Because that's my experience, and that's what I'm hearing from you. Yeah. And what did you say at the end there about popping?
I feel like I got a water balloon.
I just want to say yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Ray.
No, I was just loved what Steve said about living without anesthesia. And yet I have my little bottle of anesthesia outside my bed.
Yeah.
And it's only gradual that I let it go. You know, it would be nice for me to let go of all my conditioning, my habits, and so forth, instantly, because I am becoming aware of the rituals and the forms that we do here that point to something else. And yet, in spite of it all, you know, there's a part of me that just doesn't want to let go of what it's known. Or come to believe in its regular life.
So. Yeah, and I think, you know, especially around this aspect of anesthesia, I think it's less about letting it go and seeing what we're taking in. You know, because, you know, some of these very things that we might say that we anesthetize our lives to are things that are essential. You know, food is medicine. We have to have it, and yet I can, certain times of the night, it's kind of like predictable that Paul's going to go hit the snacks, you know, and I can see that. And I think this aspect of seeing these tendencies, that is it, that we really need to see those. This should let it go, or, you know, get rid of these, that is what Melissa is saying, that we're just adding something else in there. So get really familiar with these.
I think the wish that I hear you expressing, they would just go away.
Yeah.
You know, and you know that they don't really, they had a function, so they're important in the whole self-construct, so why would they go away? Right, and this is why I think loving them instead of trying to throw them away is such a powerful way to, right? Because then they lose their efficacy. You know, oh, maybe I don't have to work so hard to protect you. And sometimes there's a gradual wearing away, and sometimes there's a pop, like Bix was saying, right? There's no predicting. But if I, in my experience, trying to get rid of stuff, trying to be a different person has solidified the part of myself that I was trying to get rid of. And the embracing of it, that, oh, wow, thank you for helping me survive my childhood, adolescence, whatever. Thank you so much. That's great. Yeah, this was good, but not anymore. But you're still here. Well, okay then. You know, you can have a little talk with yourself. This is all made up. It's kind of ridiculous and delusional. And yet it's really effective to counteract the fighting reality. Because you know what happens when you fight reality. Who wins? Reality always wins. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And well, reality is another translation of the word Dharma, by the way. Go ahead.
Also, to put what Ray, what you were saying about anesthetics with what Steve was saying about the monastic life, that can become another kind of anesthesis. Yeah. And we have to be careful about that. It's a reason that Bodhidharma has, you know, no holiness. We don't want to rest in some sense of we're so spiritual doing this. We don't want to cultivate meditative states that actually insulate us from the pain rather than open our hearts to it. All kinds of things can go wrong. And I think that's a lot of what you could call the spiritual life is resisting those temptations. Asceticism can be a terrible temptation, and I know this because I went through an ascetic phase, and it was probably one of the most self-indulgent things I've ever done.
Self-indulgent being the operative word, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that I'm so holy, you know, whatever. Yeah, it's amazing. The ego will use everything.
Yeah,
that's the thing, right? Yeah. It's desperate to survive. Just desperate.
Yeah. Even the last round of sitting or the last doksan, don't we have to go back to childhood? It's just whatever was that last thing. Yeah. I'll just hold on to it.
The last mistake I made.
Yeah. Oh yeah. My gosh. Mm. Yeah.
Yep, precious guy.
I've had difficulty during the session with wanting to do everything right, or even just sort of right, and struggle and been very uncomfortable, like even memory stuff or, you know, whatever. And, you know, just by being here and your talks and going to the Dokusans, it's me that I'm fighting the biggest. And I know that. I'm just like, I want that head on top of my head so bad. And I know you can say, no, you can't do that. I'm like, so, I mean, it's intellectually, I was like, no, you can't do that. But then really, I think I'm really trying to do it. With all of my might, I am trying to do it. And so actually, just for little instances, I've had a little bit of like, hey, it's okay to be you. It's okay to be you and you forgot this or you messed this up. It's okay. Which I didn't expect going by the beginning of the session and waking up at 5 in the morning and all that. So, I don't know, I guess I feel, but I got to be careful because this will be my idea that everything is all, now I'm exactly. All set. So,
No, it's just what Alan was saying, right? Sure. Yeah, we really can use everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how do you stop and keep wanting to do it?
Well, actually, let's pick that apart because it's pretty straightforward based on what we've been talking about. How do you stop it? You see it. Yeah. You go, oh, there you are again. Yep. Okay. And then it loses its power. Just like my little electric car in the frigid temperatures, it just loses its power. Yeah, it's really, it's not that complicated, it's really difficult. Because the compelling nature of those ideas, and when we have a great idea, like, oh, I'm the problem, oh, this isn't such a, it's not, you. This is just what Alan was saying about the, in the monastic life, we can get, we can love the purity of it. You know, we become purity junkies. And some of us who are who have experienced those things know that it, the Buddha experienced it. Sure. Right? You know, he went on a whole ascetic purity thing when he left the palace and was trying to figure out what life was all about, and he starved himself. There's some pictures of the Buddha, all skin and bones, right? I'm going to really take care of this. And then he received milk and rice from a young milkmaid, and then he sat. He needed to nourish himself. So, we try not to fall in love with the solutions to the problems. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Laura, you answer?
Yeah, I mean, I had a whole other thought. Right, here I am. Well, I just will take you where I am now, because my thought was so interrupted by how sweet it was to hear you say it's okay to be me. I just,
yeah,
like everything else, it didn't really matter whatever I thought I was going to say. And it even Bix, too, just like popping, you know, I just like imagine Bix actually popping. And, you know, like still, it's okay to just be that. An explosive mess or mistake or whatever it is, you know, and just hearing that, like, humanity of it, like, it just cuts right to my heart, and everything else falls away.
Yeah.
In this moment, you can feel how touching that is. Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is definitely one of the, you know, the aspect that all of our ancestors are right here. And one of the things that I so appreciate is definitely, you know, the reading, definitely the talks and the Dharma dialogue in this aspect of each of us coming forward just as we are. And it's amazing how when we come forward so authentically that it rings true with so many other folks. And whether this anything that said as far as this morning rings true for you or not, that's fine. It's not searching for that. It's just that this aspect of this ability to come forward. That's what I so love about our Sangha. Yeah.
So this might be a time to invite people who haven't said anything. This could be your opportunity, and here's Aaron.
Yeah, just hearing what people are saying just helping me appreciate that much more, just how we come together here to do this. And a lot of times I have kind of a thought before I come. It's not like a really strong thought, but it's like, we're just going to sit. Like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
And I always have that thought. And then I think, well, there are all these other people are going to do this too. All crazy. Like me, I appreciate it. I guess I just appreciate it that everybody is willing to come and do this thing that, I don't know, is not, I don't know how to say it, but it's just, and then when I come here and I see all the ways that we interact and how much we help each other by making mistakes, by catching each other, and letting, you know, people lead or not lead, or all these different tiny things that we do.
Mm-hmm. That's so beautifully said. Thank you.
Yeah.
Paige?
I would like to echo something similar. I think it's, and I was thinking it's really cool to be here, because in a lot of circumstances and like social interactions, it's fun. It's like, it's fun, but I feel like a little bit more pressure. In here, it's, I guess, a little calmer and zen, and everyone's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's actually an important thing to say, because, you know, I was in a sangha where nobody was nice. and this was a sign of something, you know, that this group prided itself on being kind of nasty, and you had to really work to be accepted, and you know, I never was. And that's not the Bodhisattva way. You know, the Bodhisattva way is somebody asks for teaching, you give them the teaching, and somebody asks to be part of the Sangha, you welcome them in. So the very first time I participated in the Boundless Way Sangha, I just was so touched by that. Like, these people are serious, but they're really nice, and they also know how to laugh at themselves. And that, to me, is what Zen is about, and not this disciplinarian, you know, tough, you're not good enough for us attitude that you run into some places.
But you know what else? And you know what else? Because I agree with everything Alan just said. We're not nice. We may appear to be nice, but for me, you know, nice has a little element of indulgence in it. I do not indulge people's delusions. I have no patience for them. I mean, I have patience for human beings. I love the Buddha nature that shines out of everybody. But I won't put up with it. I think I used to, because I was trying to be nice. But I failed miserably. It didn't work. We were kind of talking about this the other day. Not about me, but just that attempt. Right? So we can pride ourselves on anything. We pride ourselves on being nice. Mm-hmm. We can pride ourselves on being assholes. Mm-hmm. You know, there's asshole Zen and there's nice Zen. And then there's, for me, and I think Paul and Alan will agree, but I'm pretty sure I can count on that. I want you to wake up.
Absolutely.
That's all I want. Mm. And I know it's possible. And this is how, this is one way to do it. Yeah.
And I'll just say, for reassurance, I don't remember you ever being nice.
I almost jumped in and said, well, except for Melissa earlier.
Oh,
well,
there you go, right? Nice, yeah. Not nice.
My Shokin t-shirt.
Oh, right.
My
dress. You're my Dharma hair. Yeah. Not been nice to you. But you know, but kind.
Yeah.
Kind, right. Yes. Yeah. I think we do. I don't want to pride myself on our kindness, but I think that's a very high value in Boundless Way. Right? Because everybody's carrying around this huge burden of suffering. Everybody. I've never met a person who isn't. And so that's where the compassion, the kindness comes, right? So it's not an indulgence. I want to make that differentiation. We have our structure. Yeah. We have our guidelines. We have all that. And there's a guy up on the altar there with a sword, Manjushri. He's the spirit of wisdom, the Bodhisattva of wisdom. You can see him holding up the sword. And he cuts through delusion. And then right below him is Avalokiteshvara, Kannon. And she's the embodiment of compassion. And they're almost always together. Mm. Right? So maybe, what do you think? Is that a good place to end? That's what I'm feeling.
So.
Yeah. Unless there's one more person who hasn't spoken who really wants to, and if you don't, you'll regret it forever. You know who you are. Okay. Thank you.